Everyone, Leslie Cornwell, certified nurse midwife with midwifery business consultation. I have Christine Strothers, a certified professional midwife in North Carolina. I got the privilege of meeting her last fall, and then we were connecting about 6 months in advance. She invited me to do a business conference. We had a riot. And I was telling you before we started recording that seriously, in her town, she has the best briskets and macaroni and cheese in the country. And I have to figure out a conference to come back just to get another good cooked meal at that restaurant.
Right? Good food down here. Great yeah. food.
Yeah. So Christine, tell us a little bit about yourself, since people that are listening to this don't know nearly much about you as I do.
So I've been a CPM for about 12 years, 13 years. And I kind of came by the weird route of being a nurse first, which, you know, it's a very different track. Most home birth midwives come through a different path, but that was just my path at the time. And I do exclusively home births now. I worked at a birth center for a while, about 7 years, in a state where they have licensing, but I've always lived in North Carolina as long as I've been practicing. So I transitioned to there, and that was different, you know, to go from a licensed, regulated state to a outlaw state, I guess you want to call it.
Illegal. What's the regulations at this point in North Carolina?
Yeah, it's different. It's really out there. And but you know, we're working. We're trying to change things,
make progress. You know, yep.
Yeah. But there are a lot of midwives here. So, one of the things that I've really started doing over the last probably six, seven years is to do a lot more with education. So I have a midwifery school, a community birth school through Ancient Art Midwifery. That's my curriculum base that I use. And, also how I ever got hooked up with you, Leslie, was through my organization called Carolina Birth Junkies. And we actually started off by, we wanted to do like a midwives birth worker retreat and conference, and we had to renew for NRP. So we were like, let's make it fun. Let's do like midwife summer camp. And so we started doing that, and it was great. Like the first time we did it, we're like, I don't know, maybe this is going to be a flop. Maybe this just not going to be worth it. Within like an hour of starting this conference, we were like, every year. So we do that every year in August. And this time it's going to be 5 days. We always do it at a place in South Carolina, just over the border. I actually do Birth Junkies with my good friend, Lori Gibson, who's a midwife, licensed midwife in South Carolina. And so we are doing neonatal resuscitation. And then we, on the weekend, we have speakers for sessions, like 90 minute sessions. So usually we do like five a day, and just on all different topics. And that is super fun. And then we also do fun things. Like we have a pool party, and we do the secret code is midwives after hours, because, you know, nobody parties like a midwife off call.
Yeah, when you get to be off call, you go to the extreme, because you don't get to do it very often.
You got to get all your fun in a really short time. And then Monday and Tuesday of that conference, we're going to have Breach Without Borders come, and they've come before to our conferences. And then, so that's you know, just for this year, what we're doing. But we also do every month, we do some sort of an educational workshop. Sometimes it's like when you came and did the business conference, we do things like that. We do, I'll do some skills workshops. Like that's something that we've done a lot. We try to do those really regularly and always get CEUs for those. So the ones I usually teach, and I usually teach them every year, are, you know, shoulder dystocia, hemorrhage and estimated blood loss, stuff like that. And we also do suturing. We have a suturing workshop coming up. So it's just really evolved into being, and it works well with school, with, you know, teaching, because I can be like, okay, it'd be really good if I could just do this workshop to line up time-wise with the module I'm doing about postpartum complications or whatever.
Right. So you can do online, in-person syncing.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah.
Oh my goodness. You have, yeah, you run a full-time practice. You're a full-time mom, wife, you run a midwifery school. Like you wear all these wonderful hats and you do color your hair or just like, you don't have the gray.
I have a lot more gray.
But yeah, I mean, you're sane, and you'll have to show everybody your coffee cup because we were joking beforehand.
Yeah, check it out.
Coffee cups have very special slogans, so your poor husband can't take any to work.
Yeah, he can't drink a real cup of coffee in this house.
That's hilarious. So one of the topics you and I were talking about. So yeah, I think anybody that's thinking about doing trainings in their area or starting what you guys have created, you'd be a great resource for them. Especially go to the Carolina Birth Junkies website and just really immerse yourself because you've done amazing things there. And it doesn't happen overnight. I mean, we were just talking since the business conference, some of the tips and suggestions of helping to collaborate are slowly being implemented in the community. And I loved the name. We were using the past with other areas in Kansas, the Midwifery Community Co-op, but I think I like your co-op name you guys have picked better.
We decided to call it the Birth Pool, which was so funny.
It's
we
got had funny go with it. So many levels. Yes, it's a midwife joke, you know.
It is. I know people are like, "What? Why is that funny?" But we love it. So we just are trying to have midwives not. You know, I think when you say group practice, people get really kind of afraid and are like, but I want my clients and I want to get.
And then they, what's the midwifery quality versus quantity?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just as a way to try to have midwives and birth assistants be able to have a little bit more dependability and structure, but to be able to feel like you can call somebody when you need somebody, right?
So the anxiety side, we don't give enough credit to the adrenaline and the fatigue and the anxious of like, okay, I've got two ladies in labor and I don't have anybody to call. I don't have those resources. I don't have the cushion of the unpredictabilities with birth.
Yeah, right. And I think in a nice way, it allows you to maybe expand and maybe take some folks that, you know, otherwise you might be like, gosh, you know, I already have four
people. The algorithm, that 5-week window. Do I want to push the limits? And
Right. Where you could be like, hey, you know, I have these other midwives. Right now there are five midwives in the pool. And then we have about twice that many assistants. So, you know, if you need someone to, like you said, two people in labor, you'd be like, okay, who is on the calendar to help?
And these are private practices. You guys don't have business arrangements. You each have your own practice, but you're supporting each other on the call coverage.
Right. And what we did was we got together and decided, okay, what are you paying someone if someone does a birth for you, or if someone does a prenatal day for you, or, how much are we paying assistants? How much are we paying a second midwife? And we just all agreed to that. And, you know, I think it was weird. It was an unusual hurdle that we had to get through because it's not uncommon in our area anyway, to be like, well, let's just barter out the births. And I was like, no, you know what?
And then it gets complicated and then you forget about it. And then it's uneven. And then someone feels taken advantage of. Just make it simple. Or one midwife would charge $800 to back up. Another midwife would charge $400. And then you'd get some, you'd always be trying to call the one. And she's like, why is everybody using me for backup?
Because you're not charging enough. Right. So we kind of had to come to a place where we were like, okay, what's acceptable? And it was interesting because, you know, some people were like, well, you know, I really only want to pay this much. And I'm like, yeah, but do you want to only get paid that much? Why don't you say, well, this is what it's worth? And, you know, and like, I even said, hey, you know what, you know, I would love to be able to pay, you know, an assistant or a doula or another CPM to go to the hospital with somebody that needs to transport. Like, I'm kind of too busy to go there and do that. Right. And I kind of hate it. That's the other thing.
When you get to see the other side, you're like, no, informed consent. When you're on the other side, it's very difficult emotionally to step into the hospital setting. Yeah.
Right. But you know, some of these newer midwives and definitely a lot of the birth assistants, you know, are doulas or, you know, have been doulas. And so they are very much like, yeah, that's cool. I can do the doula in the hospital thing, you know? Yeah. And I was like, I would gladly pay you for that.
I think that's part of consistency among your pool that you're putting together. If one loves to transport and the other ones don't, like, you kind of want to have a slight cohesiveness of what the scope of the midwives are in the area. And because I think it gets muddied water where they do a consult with one and then they think, well, a midwife transports to the hospital, but not necessarily is that part of their services. Don't make assumptions. And
Right. So I think that's been real helpful too, to say, you know, to remind everybody, hey, when you're doing your financial agreement, don't be specific and say, I will go to the hospital with you.
That's a lot to promise.
Maybe say
someone on our team will support you.
Right. So, you know, that was kind of interesting. That was like where the business stuff really came in for us was, you know, you got to work things out and don't just assume it's all going to play out and everybody's going to be good. And then I'll do a birth for her and we'll be even. It never works out.
No,
never.
Yeah. You want writing clear expectations. I mean, that was the whole point. We had such a riot last fall and doing that conference and just having a conversation about getting you to think about being proactive, business agreements, things midwives don't like to do, but once you do them, it'll have a ripple effect. It'll really have a ripple effect on your foundation of your community and your work life. And yes, it's a little bit of work to iron out the kinks and reduce the risks by protecting your assets and estate plan and legal paperwork with the lawyer and agreements. But once you do those things, you are going to be so much happier. So I'm glad you guys are implementing all the things we talked about.
Yeah, it's been good. And it's been also a good way to, you know, thinking about from a midwifery school director, you know, kind of position to have people that are trying to kind of break into apprenticing and everything. And so we definitely also had some guidelines for people that are working as birth assistants and saying, okay, you know, you have to do this training and you have to do so many training births essentially, right? Then, you know, then you can go into being a birth assistant and being paid, or you can count it as a birth for your NARM paperwork. So I was like, you know, you can come to a birth as a doula, or as a student, or as a birth assistant, but only one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You can't wear five hats, because when you're a midwife, you're not going to wear all those. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You can't do it. And and it's interesting because, you know, I liked leaving in that it open-ended that way and not saying, okay, if you're an apprentice, you have to come to the birth as an apprentice and that sort of thing. Because
it may ebb and flow. Maybe there's another apprentice on call, but you want the experience. You want a little extra money. Now you can be a birth assistant. Because I think that's part of what I've had a CPM student for a while too. And just the vagueness of the paperwork. Sometimes they're like, well, I don't want to violate anything. Is it going to count? And so it's always having, like, even as a school, clear expectations. No, this does count. This doesn't count. These are the situations. You can wear multiple hats, but not in one birth scenario. And then having well-documented. Yes. So yeah, everything's about clear expectations, good communication. Like, I think that's the Achilles of anything, a relationship, a client you take care of, a business partner. Like, we need more communication courses and ways to help interpret or bridge win-win situations. So I was really excited about one of the courses you're working on with this preceptor and the student relationship. I thought that was a great idea.
Yeah. It really grew out of kind of a stressful situation with one of my students, but I just started a course I'm about to kind of put it online for preceptors and apprentices to take together as a couple. And, you know, we're joking, it's like couples therapy. So you're doing a lot of interacting and working through some of that official stuff, right? Like, how do you have a contract? What does that look like? What does your plan look like? You know, long-term planning and where that relationship is going to go and learning styles and different things. I think that's going to be really good. I did a pilot for it in the fall. This is past fall. And it was really good. And I think it was helpful too, to have, there's some conference calls and stuff, live stuff involved, and to have calls with just preceptors. And calls with just the apprentices, so that, you know, there are things that
there's support and there's a little confidentiality, and then you can get the key themes and help bridge it, and not naming in the central core, but you can help to bridge the communication. Yeah. The other thing I was thinking about was just the like personality tests. There's so many great ones out there, having part of your course where each person takes it. Because when you were just talking about learning style, there's also teaching styles. Like I can see tension where someone's a visual learner for the first few times and they don't want to get their hands in. And then the preceptor is like, they're more of just hands-on, that's their style. So then they're making them jump in and then the student's having a panic attack because that's not their learning style. Like, so
I don't understand that.
And if they're more of an introvert versus extrovert, or like they innately are a little more judgy, not in a bad way, but just the way that they analytically think, or if they're more spiritual, like it's interesting as midwives as a whole, most of us tend to be more creative and more of the introvert. Yes, we fight the system, but we tend to, we do home births. We want private. We want like, that's our innate happy places. So I would love to see you at implementing personalities. Then the midwives can learn themselves better. Like, okay, this is why I have tensions with this extrovert, because I'm an extreme introvert and everything they're saying is all these big ideas and dreams. And I'm like, I just want simple and consistent.
Right. Or like, I don't want, you know, my apprentice talking or being friends with my clients. And I'm like, well, but if she's a really friendly person, that's
going to happen. Yeah. And she's building, I mean, they're just, some people are more talkative and warm and bubbly and have relationships are a higher thing. And sometimes, I mean, there is that fine line of professional versus, and the purpose, but you also can say, hey, we want to help you out, or like, let's get our kids together or just chat. Like, you got to figure out where that gray zone, as long as you're not violating health information or your business intellectual things, like there is a fine line, but you can't micromanage someone's personal life.
Right. Yeah. And there's a lot of that going on. And the other thing that I'm going to talk about a lot in the course, but is also like it's kind of a pet project for me right now, is to stop looking at new midwives and students and apprentices as your competition. Like it makes my head explode when I hear someone say, well, I don't want to train my competition. Really?
You're insane. That's that scarcity mindset of all you're picturing is that 2% of the women that are picking home birth, when I'm picturing the 80% that are low risk, healthy, and would pick us if they actually had good marketing campaigns and knew we existed. So, and I'm like, you guys all have waiting lists. It's not like you're like, it's crazy to me when I hear that too. Like the fear and the scarcity that comes out with some of these thought processes.
Yeah. It's really a struggle. And it surprised me, I guess, because I don't feel that way at all. Like I'm all about training more midwives, like training more good.
We need more. Yes. And you want them safe and qualified. If you know you've got very good skills and business structures, you're training a high quality next generation versus I think in some states, I would see the few that are training are probably not the ones you want to be training. Right. So then in 5, 10, 15 years, you're like, what is going on with this community and culture? Well, you know who trained that? Like, and that's the other thing I see is the few that tend to train are, if you get in that culture mindset, it's interesting. So yes, I think it's diversity and having lots of trainers and lots of perspectives and giving a student an opportunity to not just always be with one midwife, because that's the only one that's even precepting, versus they're seeing all these other styles and all these other experiences, is going to make them a better midwife.
Yeah, definitely. So, and that's, you know, it makes me sad when people are like, I just don't really want to take on an apprentice. It's too much responsibility and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, then why are you surprised that you feel so burned out? Right. You're taking on all this as in such a negative way, right? Like I have to have all the people, I have to have all the clients, and I'm the only midwife for them,
but then wonder why I'm running out of time each day.
Yeah, exactly. And my life is just so stressful and I never sleep. Where if you could be like, hey, you know, there's a lot of good people out there. There's a lot of good, you know, students and apprentices and doulas and childbirth educators. You know, if you're saying, don't take a childbirth class because I don't know what they're going to tell you, and don't hire a doula because they might, you know, undermine what I'm saying, you know, it's a mentality thing, right? Mm-hmm. And, I feel like I'm fighting that every day.
Yeah. But I think the biggest barrier, and you and I are in such alignment, is bridging the barriers of myths and misunderstandings in education. And maybe they wholeheartedly would love a student, but they don't even know where to start with contracts and getting associated with a school and the complexity and the, like, if we can make resources that are more available and more acclimated in the core midwifery programs. I mean, that's where I'm biased with finances and business. Like, I feel like every midwifery school, you should have to take a semester or a continuing ed of some kind, because there's so many more midwives would start businesses if they really understood. They think they're going to be self-employed. They see these stereotypes of working all the time when there can be other ways to do it. And there are other possibilities. So I feel like we could make more midwives. We could sustain, we could give opportunities to so many midwives that want to start a business that just, they've never been exposed. They don't even know where to start. It's overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally true. Totally true. So it's just,
you said your course is going to come out soon. Where will they go to find this amazing course?
It's going to be through the Ancient Art Midwifery online portal. It'll be through them. So, but I want to offer it to whoever wants it. Right.
Yeah. I was going to say, if we could, once you get it public, please send me an email and I'll update. I'm not going to put this video out for a couple of weeks. So I'm hoping I'll put it in the description and put some lot of great resources that people can connect. Cause our whole point is, I think half of what I do is connecting people with great people that have resources they're looking for. Yes, I have some, the knowledge they're looking for, but the other half of it is like, you're creating this amazing practice. You want to create a midwifery school. You want to create a co-op, but don't even know where to start. I know who to connect you with that's doing it very well. So I think that the gatekeeper, the midwifery connection gatekeeper of some kind, but so that's why I love doing these interviews. And I appreciate you doing it with me, Christine. Any words of wisdom you want to do for aspiring midwives, burnout midwives, midwives that are just feeling like, I need some inspiration right now?
Well, you know, it's funny because I was just thinking about that the other day. I was reviewing something for the, you know, for the class that we're about to put up. And there's this quote that I saw, and it spoke to me so much about where students are. And, you know, you want to be a midwife, but do you, can you do it? And it said, you probably saw this before, it said, if it's your calling, it will keep calling you. And, you know, I think because so many people are like, I have to do this and then I have to do this. And then, you know, I have to kind of accelerate that into this. And, and it's like, you know what, if it's really what you're supposed to do, you just keep
the working. Passion will push you towards it. Yes.
Yeah. Just whatever pace and, you know, whatever things that come up, if it's the right thing, you'll keep doing it and it will keep you
motivated and excited and see the impact it's doing.
And it also kind of struck me too, like, that doesn't mean that has to be your whole life and the only thing you do, right? You can do a lot with midwifery and helping midwives and the whole community and women and families. Maybe it's, you know, just to say it's your calling doesn't mean it means this. It means
that stereotype. I always say midwife means with woman. It doesn't mean catching babies. So there's a full scope. If you don't want to be on call, there's many different services, or maybe you have a great skill set in the backdrops, marketing, something else that supports midwives in a different direction. Like, I think sometimes people get down, well, I think this is so amazing and I don't want to be on call, but this is what midwives do. They don't think outside the box. Well, what unique skills and talents and drives and passions do I have that's going to help out the midwifery community to serve more families, like being the backdrop to the backdrops. People don't realize. I mean, there's so many people that decided to be doulas for a little bit and then realize, oh my gosh, nobody's doing marketing. Nobody's doing website design. That's what I did for 20 years. So I'm not going to be a doula. I'm just going to support the midwives in this way because it's going to have a bigger impact.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. It's so true. It's so true. So, you know, just, I think it's really important for us that are in that and working in midwifery to be like, hey, you know what? It's okay. If you're saying, gosh, I want to be a midwife, but I have 4 little children, or, you know, how am I going to make this work? And to say, yeah, you know what? You can make it work. You can make it work so that you can be a midwife and still be married and still be a mom and still, you know, have your other interests or other things that you're good at. And, that makes you a better person and You know, then you, maybe you have some space to be kind and help out your fellow midwives or to help out a student or whatever.
I think. Yeah. And I would love to see that in your preceptor student course, like realistic expectations. Cause I think too many preceptors are like, it's all or nothing. Like I'm committing to you. I have to be on call 24/7. So you have to be on call 24/7. And many of them financially can't do that, or it's not realistic with their there's barriers put up to even make a preceptor relationship. Cause it's the extreme of all or nothing. And how can you have 2-3 students where you make a schedule, just like the birth assistant, like asking them to be on call 24/7 and you're only doing a few births a month is a lot to ask of someone. How can we set up these co-ops, these birth pools for the student component side, that maybe there's 3 to 5 midwifery practices, but as a team, we're going to take on 2-3 students that are going to be able to be on call and experience an office among all of us. They're going to be better midwives. So yeah, you and I can brainstorm greatly about your course. I love this idea.
We have good ideas. Good
idea. We do. Well, thank you so much, Christine, for being on with me. I'll put your contact information at the bottom so people can reach out and help to get these great programs started in their areas.
Wonderful. Thanks, Leslie.